We're looking at the inequities of running a household. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the past half century, there have been modest increases in men's housework and steep declines in women's, and both men and women have increased their time with the kids. But here's the thing, the data shows women around the world do between 2 and 10 times as much unpaid care and domestic work as men. So what do you think? Do you and your mate plan to split domestic duties? Maybe you've made it work for a while, but things changed once you had a baby. Fathers, do you try to help with the domestic responsibilities? Do you take a lead? How do you work with your spouse to share the load? We're at 800-642-1234. Darcy Lockman is a writer and clinical psychologist based in New York, and her new book is called All the Rage: Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Darcy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have to say I was on vacation last week, and I can say for the record, hosting an hour of live radio is easier than getting all the kids to school on time in the right place with the right socks and everything. So
absolutely,
just for the record. But I want to know, like, what made you turn your attention to division of labor in families?
I was really surprised when my husband and I had kids, the way things went. We're both progressive-minded people. We met in grad school. I was not going to be a stay-at-home mom. We assumed that we would just kind of split things. But I ended up finding myself taking care of most of the stuff having to do with the kids. And it was overwhelming, and I often found myself frustrated with my husband. And I looked at the couples around us and saw that everyone else was kind of experiencing the same thing. Full-time working moms around me were all frustrated with this. And every day I found myself asking, why is it still this way? This isn't what we expected. And finally, the question became such a burning one that I decided to dig into the research and really unpack why it was still this way, because it wasn't what the women that I knew went into parenting expecting, nor the men for that matter.
Right. So here we are in 2019, not 1950. So we know a lot has changed, and it used to be common for moms to be the sole parent responsible for the childcare and the household duties. So what do we know now about the breakdown of domestic tasks?
What the time use studies show, and these are done by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is that since about the year 2000, dads have been contributing about 35% of the childcare in two career couples. So what I didn't know before I dug into this research was that 35% had leveled off around the year 2000. It stopped going up. So for the last 20 years, women have been doing about 65% of the childcare. And again, that's women who work full time. There's this story these days of the modern involved dad. We all know fathers are so much more involved with their kids than they were in 1950. And it's great. You know, it's great for fathers. It's great for children. It's great for families. What we haven't been talking about is co-parenting. So dads are more involved with their kids, but moms are still doing the bulk of the co-parenting.
And what do we mean when we talk about household work, about childcare duties? Can you paint us a picture of what these tasks are? Because this is more than just dishes and laundry.
Oh, yes. Actually, I'm looking at childcare. When I was looking at this stuff, I wasn't particularly looking at housework. So we're talking about meal prep, permission slips, remembering to buy a birthday present for the birthday party, figuring out kind of last-minute childcare for school breaks or when kids are sick.
Summer all camp sign-ups.
Summer camp, right.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Summer camp sign-ups are a big one. So all the kind of really the mental labor of parenting, most of it defaults to mothers when men and women don't work together really carefully to parse this stuff out. We're a lot more sexist in our personal relationships than we would have imagined ourselves, both men and women.
So you set out, you interviewed dozens of couples about how they manage this balance of childcare, housework, their professional careers. What came out of that? What was most surprising, your aha moments?
What was really interesting was, so I actually set out to interview 100 women. Betty Friedan did that for The Feminine Mystique, and that was sort of my guideline. But as I got further and further into interviewing women, what I realized was no matter the region of the country or their age or their socioeconomic status, all the interviews were the same. I heard the same stories again and again. So I ended up stopping at 50 women because I just thought, well, I'm just hearing the same thing over and over. And women were so engaged about this topic. I loved doing these interviews. Everyone had so much energy around it and so much frustration and so many thoughts to share. And then I went back to the women and asked if I could interview their husbands because I wanted to make sure I was interviewing men whose wives were frustrated by this, you know, just to have that as a background. And the men who agreed to do it, and far less men agreed than women, they were really nice, but they didn't have much to say. It just wasn't a topic that had ever really caught their attention, even though their wives had brought it up as a point of difficulty.
So they were interested in talking with you and they were sympathetic, and yet they were kind of unclear as to why are we talking about this?
Yeah. I mean, if someone called me and said, let's talk about golf, that's about as engaged as the men were in the discussion. Again, they were happy to talk and to volunteer their time, but it was just not something that piqued their interest.
We're looking at the Division of Labor in American Households with Darcy Lockman as our guide. Her new book is called All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do things look in your household? Are childcare responsibilities and chores shared between you and your spouse? Or do you find yourself carrying more of the work? Does that ever burn you out? Or have you have it down to a science? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Cheryl now in Caledonia. Hi, Cheryl.
Good morning.
What's on your mind? Yeah.
My husband and I have been married 19 years. And when we were first married, his mom did a lot of the chores. Dad did a lot of the, you know, outside housework and things. So it was a pretty gender, you know, typical division of labor. And when we were first married, I think he kind of, you know, assumed that things would follow those lines. And we both work full time. So it was hard to manage everything and then try to, you know, get meals on the table, things like that. One night I actually had to go and work late. And I asked him to put the salmon away, and the salmon sat on our stove. And as I came home, obviously we couldn't eat it. It kind of struck me like, if I always take care of the messes, then, you know, obviously he will never really maybe engage. So I got maybe a little passive aggressive idea to go on what I called chore strikes. So I would ultimately just choose a chore and not do it. And it was good for me because it made me realize that, you know what, if you don't take the garbage out right away, it's really okay. And what it did is it allowed him to kind of see things when they got to be problems, when he ran out of socks or, you know, didn't have the present for the birthday party that he was going to, that he engaged. And slowly over time, he realized that, you know, he needed to step up and help out too. About 2 years after we started doing this, he realized that there was such a thing called the chore strike. And I think it opened his eyes, but it's created really good dialogue. And now to this day, he does all the laundry. He's amazing. I tend to do the shopping because it's not that, you know, but we'll both chip in with vacuuming. When we see the, you know, toilet needs cleaning, he'll jump in and do it. And I think it's just a matter of sometimes really having that conversation early on and trying to get them to help out.
Cheryl, thanks so much. Darcy, what about chore strikes?
I heard that from women who had tried to say to their husbands, hey, this isn't working, and they didn't get much response from their husbands would go on chore strikes. And just as Cheryl is saying, it does move the needle a little bit. It can.
Darcy Lockman is our guide. Your insights, your stories on how your household functions. We're at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the Division of Family Labor, which can be the primary source of conflict after couples have kids. Moms and kids under age 4 report the greatest feeling of inequity. Let's talk about it with your thoughts, how your family functions. Stay with us. We'll be back to this conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Thank you. We're looking at household parity and where we're at in America. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and the book is called All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Darcy Lockman writes about how the University of Michigan has surveyed high school seniors about their values since the 1970s. Endorsement of gender equality in the family peaked in 1994 and has been on the decline ever since. The University of Chicago takes a similar pulse, finds millennials are progressive about work, but endorse increasingly traditional attitudes about home life. Your candid thoughts on home life structure, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. And clinical psychologist Darcy Lockman stays with us for this hour's conversation. Darcy, in heterosexual couples, men often take responsibility for chores like mowing the lawn or landscaping or cleaning the garage, maintaining the gutters. Once we factored those types of chores in, is that division of labor more equal?
No, the thing with the chores that men tend to take on, which sociologists observe over and over, is that those are things that can kind of be done occasionally and when one has time. And it's the day-to-day stuff that can't wait that women tend to do. I mean, meals need to be cooked a few times a day. Laundry needs to be done regularly. Children's homework needs to be done every day. You have to check the folders. You have to respond to emails from the school, all of that stuff. So it doesn't, you know, I've gotten emails from men telling me about all the yard work they do. And that's, you know, great. I hope they enjoy it. I wish I had a yard to work on. But it doesn't equal out. And even the thing with the chore strikes that Cheryl was just talking about, you can't not do the stuff that your kids need. Like, you can't go on a cooking strike exactly, because then nobody would eat. So again, the things that men tend to take on in that gendered way are more of at-will duties, as opposed to like this must be done three times every day.
Let's go to Betsy now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
What's on your mind about this?
I wanted to call in and say that this is my second child, my first as a teen from a previous marriage, and I wanted to say that I am a big supporter of parental leave in general, paid parental leave, but it's been especially wonderful and also very helpful that my partner had paid paternity leave. Because the way that we structured it, he had 12 weeks paid, generous from his employer, and we had a child care gap, and so we structured it so that he took every Friday off of work and is parenting, taking care of our infant while I'm at work every Friday. And that has made a huge difference in the way that we share our child care duties. And I think that I wish that I would have known about how big of a difference that would have made with my first. But because he's there with him for a full day on his own, it's just more natural that he's chipping in during quote unquote off hours. So that leave has been really generous in a lot of ways, but has also allowed us to sort of have a more equal structure, I think, in terms of how we parent.
Betsy, thanks for bringing this up. Darcy, what have you found about paid paternity leave and that ability to take time off from work to be with an infant?
Yeah, Betsy, I'm so glad you called. There's new research that shows that the one thing that actually moves the needle is paid paternal leave. When fathers spend time early on with their kids by themselves without the presence of another adult, they actually remain more involved. I can't remember what the stat is, but they do like 2 more hours of work a day or something with their kids than men who never got leave. So there's some really good research that supports Betsy's experience. The other thing that has been found is that countries that give a lot of maternal leave, which we think of as a good thing, right? We don't have good support for parents in the U.S. We don't have any paid leave. But those countries have found that the paid maternal leave actually shifts the division of labor more toward the mother, because the father doesn't get the experience with the baby and then feels more inept.
So where are we at with expectations? It seems like we can't break through the societal norms about domestic labor, but, you know, there are the expectations. Do mothers expect to have their lives changed by parenthood more than fathers do?
That's a good question. I think that mothers and fathers today both report that parenting is a really important part of their identity. I think what happens is that our expectations have been really impacted by this story I was talking about, the one of the modern involved father. So we go into parenting expecting parity. And when that doesn't happen, that's when there are problems. So the research actually shows that couples who agree to, say, live traditionally, where the woman is going to do most of the work, that's not where the problems lie in terms of relationship conflict. The problem is in the couples that I'm talking about. I'm an example of this myself, where they expect parity in some vague way, and then everything, or not everything, but most of the work ends up defaulting to the mother.
Let's take Steve now in Sun Prairie with thoughts on this. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Obviously, I have never done a study, but I can talk about my sphere of friends and how things kind of develop. Both of the men that I know want to be active in their kids' lives, want to do more, and set out to do that, but they never did it right in their wife's eyes. So the wife would always complain about the way it was done, both to the husband and to their friends, and then women fed off each other. You hear it in the workplace. You hear women complaining about their husband. The men realize that, and they just say, well, screw it. I can't do it right anyway. Just let her do it. So I think if women would stop complaining about men, maybe at the end of the day, there would be more equal division of labor.
Yeah, you know, I really want to push back against that a little bit. I heard things from women like, you know, around this idea. So I love this story. This woman told me about going on a business trip, and she called her husband at 10 o'clock at night, and he was still awake, you know, with their three-year-old. And she said, well, why is he still up? And her husband said, well, he says he's not tired. And the woman said to me, you know, am I complaining if I say to him, you know, it's not really reasonable to not put a kid to bed just because he says he's not tired? They all say they're not tired, and it's hard to put them to bed when they don't want to go. So I think rather than saying, like, if you don't like the way I'm doing it, I'm not going to do it anymore, men need to say, well, let's come up with some standards that we both agree on so that we're both happy with the way that the work is being performed.
We're talking with Darcy Lockman. She's a writer, a clinical psychologist. The book is called All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Who handles day-to-day responsibilities in your family? What about scheduling appointments, the extracurriculars, going through the kids' school paperwork, finding daycare? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Darcy, how does the workload get divided up for same-sex couples with children? What have studies shown there?
Well, there's actually research that suggests that of all gendered configurations of couples, lesbians parent the most harmoniously. And that makes sense given that women are really raised, or girls are raised more than boys, to be thinking about other people all the time. Boys are raised more to think about their own agency. So if you have two women parenting together, you have two people who've been really trained by society to think about the needs of others quite a lot. So I think that's why that research plays out in that way. But same-sex couples don't have sort of these gender defaults, right? So two men parenting together can't just say, well, this is women's work, even if they're not articulating that. They can't act that out. So there does tend to be more discussion about who's going to do what. I had same-sex fathers saying to me, well, we each do what we're good at. And I think that's the way that heterosexual couples think of it, too. We each do what we're good at, but we assume that women are better at this, and then things default to the mother.
Let's go to John in Brown Deer. John, hi.
Good morning. Yes, I thank you for accepting my call. I was never married, but I can relate my parents' marriage experience. And I'm at the apex of the baby boom generation. I was born in 1945. My parents were wed in 1941. When my father was drafted into the armed forces, my mother, after his basic training, my mother accompanied him to at the Fort Miles in Delaware, and they lived together off base. And as far as I can remember, during their entire married life, they shared the household duties such as shopping, housekeeping, painting, and yard work.
John, may I ask? Did your mother work outside the home?
Yes, both parents work full-time jobs. They both worked at AT&T American Telephone and Telegraph when it was the giant Bell system. My dad worked in the drafting department, and my mother was a telephone operator, and she worked a split shift.
And so you saw co-parenting in action as a kid, you know, even in the 50s.
Oh, yes, my parents cooperated when either was sick, the other took over 100%. All the way through their marriage, they cared for each other, they doctored each other, when one couldn't function, the other one just stepped in and did it. There were some disputes, of course, when they became frustrated with life. They shared child raising. When my mother was absent, my father cared for me. When my dad was absent, my mother cared for me.
And John, we're short on time, and I want Darcy to respond very quickly here. Darcy, what do you hear?
Sure. I mean, I didn't write this book, All the Rage, saying this is everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly there are couples who do a better job of sharing childcare labor than others. I think it was probably less common in the era that he's talking about, of course. And it sounds like they made their marriage work.
We're looking at the complexities of household parity and whether domestic division of labor can ever be achieved. Are you at 50-50 in your home? We're at 800-642-1234. Darcy Lockman stays with us. Her new book is called All the Rage. And coming up, we'll look at what success looks like for couples who seem to strike a balance. That's after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the distribution of chores at home and how spouses divvy up childcare. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The new book is called All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Clinical psychologist Darcy Lockman spent a year interviewing dozens of moms about this, and she writes, "It might not surprise you to learn that interviewing men about their division of labor at home proved difficult. While they were generous with their time," she writes, "it was not an idea that most of the fathers had given much thought, and even under direction, it failed to spark interest." Where do you stand on division of labor? How does it go down at your house? What questions do you have about working toward more of a healthy balance? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Darcy Lockman stays with us for this hour's conversation. Darcy, you know, an unequal division of labor can really damage marriages. What did you learn about the perceptions of over-benefiting and under-benefiting and this influence on negative emotions?
Yeah, there have been some really interesting studies in emotions and the division of household labor. And one of the findings of equity theory is that both over and under benefiters, meaning people who benefit more from the situation and people who benefit less from it, have negative feelings about this. So people who over benefit, which in this case is typically fathers, have feelings of fear and self-reproach. And those who under benefit, which in this situation is typically mothers, have feelings of anger and rage. So whatever end of the whichever side of the breakdown you find yourself on, they're negative emotions. The thing that I found particularly interesting, though, going beyond this finding, was that the researchers saw that men are typically more comfortable with over-benefiting, while women are typically more comfortable with under-benefiting. And I thought that really spoke to something that underlies this dynamic.
And so having that conversation with a partner can be really difficult, though, and it's actually a really common reason for separation. Why is communication on this so difficult?
I think that everyone is doing a lot more work once children are introduced into the home. So fathers feel like, what are you talking about? I'm doing so much. And mothers feel like, I am doing so much more than you. Why don't you see this? So people have a really hard time discussing it calmly. And the couples I found that we're working through this the best, started from a place of we know that that our sexist world is going to push us towards certain dynamics if we don't really stay on top of this. And the couples who were doing it successfully were really committed to equity from the get-go, which, by the way, doesn't mean a 50-50 split of responsibilities. It's not so easy to do things that way. But it means like constant communication about who is doing what and who's, you know, how everyone's doing with what they're doing.
Let's go to Steve now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind here?
I want to draw an analogy between husband and wife and teacher and student. What I found in my particular relationship, though I'm older, I have to be retired by now, in my particular relationship with my wife had expectations. I didn't meet them, created a lot of resentment, significant resentment. However, I was generally treated with sarcasm, but I couldn't meet her expectations. Having been a teacher, I know that if in that relationship the teacher isn't supportive and explains and patient, that the husband will purposely buck and resent and not comply with his wife's wishes. So you have to be soft and affirming and explaining if you want to get the result that you need in that relationship. And it wasn't happening in ours, and it created a lot of problems. So I think attitudinally there's an issue that needs to be addressed. And I guess that would be my point.
Steve, thanks for calling in. Darcy, what about in the terms of how you communicate with your partner?
Yeah. Look, Steve, I hear you, and I don't even disagree with you. But again, I want to push back a little. I hear from men who put this on women, you know, like, well, she didn't talk to me the right way, or her standards were too high. You know, it's sort of like the idea about women are such nags. Well, who has to nag? The person whose needs aren't being met. You know, we have this thing in our culture where it's like, oh, that nagging woman about the taking out the garbage. And it's like, well, you live in the home. If you see that something isn't being done and you don't take that responsibility on, why does the blame go to the nagger? So, Steve, I don't mean to disagree with you. I think spouses talking respectfully to each other about their problems is so important to a marriage. But I do really bristle at this idea that it's always the woman's fault. No matter what's happening, it's always the woman's fault.
Does any of this unequal division of labor spill over into our workplace? Are there ways the workplace operates that devalue women's work or unconsciously puts more on their plate?
There's a very interesting study by a group of economists that found that women are 50% more likely to volunteer for tasks that don't lead to promotion. And what they found was in male-female groups, the men didn't step up to do these things. They sort of expect that the women will do them, and then the women do them. So women get saddled with more of the scut work. This dynamic is in play both at work and at home. And I loved this study because, again, it illustrated something about our sexist expectations around who's going to get stuck with the grunt work.
What happens when women aren't at the table? When that task comes
around. Oh, right. Good question. Thank you. When women aren't there, men step up just as readily. So it's really the presence of women and everyone's assumptions that women are going to take care of it, it being childcare in the home or, you know, the tasks that no one wants to do in the office, women are going to take care of it. We all seem to expect that. As one of the economists said, men see women in the room. They know how we play these games.
Let's go to Joanne now in Milwaukee. Good morning, Joanne.
Hello. I want to tell you that I find this fantastic. I have, I'm an older generation, raised three children. So I have two of the three have children of their own, or one is going to have one soon. My son has been taking on this parenting role with Revelance for several years now. And I find it very funny to go to visit him because his wife says the same thing that you're telling me about the men. Oh, I'm not going to do that because he's not talking to me well enough, or I don't do it well enough. So she has actually more or less segregated herself from the role. So I laugh every time I go down there. I also laugh at the fact that right now my daughter is expecting. She just received her master's. So I think I'd like to know how many people do you find parity that are higher educated? Because those two, that couple, will definitely take on an equal opportunity parenting role in the near future. She's due on October 2nd.
Joanne, thanks for the call. And it sounds like it's going to be certainly more of a struggle with having the graduate coursework and a baby. Darcy?
Yeah. You know, something that some of the research finds is that more educated egalitarian couples don't practice what they preach, and less educated blue-collar couples, often because of split shifts, practice more egalitarianism than they would advocate for. So values and behavior don't match up in this area.
There's a belief that mothers are more in tune with their kids' needs, more nurturing than fathers. Did you find that this idea leads to mothers handling more of the duties at home, and specifically more childcare?
Part of the reason why this remains so stuck is that we have this idea that mothers are more biologically primed for parenthood. And this actually proves pretty much untrue. Males and females both experience hormonal changes during a woman's pregnancy. And I didn't know this before I started the research. Maybe other people knew this. But men's hormones, the same hormones that rise in women during pregnancy, also rise in men, lesser in degree, but the same hormones. We are all, as humans, primed to want to care for small beings. It's been important to the survival of the species. So, but this belief in like maternal biology being deterministic really leads people to kind of live in these sexist ways. So we have a lot of work to do around correcting that notion. We have ideas about maternal instincts. We don't talk about paternal instincts. And by the way, there are no parenting instincts in the way that biologists use the word. Parenting is learned, not innate, for women as well as men.
Talking with Darcy Lockman, she's a writer, a clinical psychologist. Her book is called All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Your thoughts on this as well, 800-642-1234. Dads, do you think about the division of domestic responsibilities in your family? How do you work with your spouse to share the load? And families without kids, what does your system look like? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. Let's go to Kelly now, joining us from Cascade. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, great show. Thank you. So my husband used to be in banking and desperately wanted out of it, and he wanted to try his hand at home. So we switched. I went to work full time. He is tending to everything at home, from cooking and cleaning to getting the kids off to school to helping with homework. We now have a small farm, so that keeps him busy too. And it's been a really interesting shift. I find myself wanting to get over-involved when I am at home. And he, when he's making dinner, he says, go play with the kids. Like, your job is to play, which is hard for me. you know, and then I find myself sometimes kind of running in circles where I see him able to focus a little bit more on the things he wants to get done. I will get myself really busy with just, like, wanting to pick up or making work out of things that really don't need to, they don't have to be done. So it's been a great shift for us. I think there's a lot of stereotypes, especially with men filling that role. I think he gets some flack from his buddies just about it not really being a job. And I would definitely beg to disagree with that.
Kelly, thanks for sharing your story. And there's a lot there, Darcy.
Yeah, I spoke with men who were stay-at-home dads, and they talked about that pushback, too. I talked to one guy who said, I don't even want to have any friends who are stay-at-home fathers, because even they are, you know, derisive of what they're doing, and they talk about it like, oh, it's just until I get back to work. So, you know, I think it's really hard to be a dad and take that stuff on. You take a kind of a hit to your masculinity among your friends, and that's really too bad.
The book is called All the Rage. Darcy Lockman is our guide. Your questions, your insights on division of household chores, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. How do you handle cooking, cleaning, scheduling at your house? Do you think your arrangement works? What are the pitfalls? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the new book, All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Darcy Lockman interviewed dozens of mothers about the division of labor at home, and she writes about how gratitude is getting in the way of fairness, that it's easier to feel grateful for all that has changed than to acknowledge all that has yet to change. And gratitude is the precursor to less conflict rather than more. And for women raising children with a modern involved father, there is some pressure to land on the side of appreciation. So are you appreciative of an arrangement that perhaps is close to parity or hasn't really achieved fairness? We're at 800-642-1234, and Darcy Lockman stays with us for this conversation on division of labor. Darcy, as I was reading your book, I remember July of 2012 when the article from Anne-Marie Slaughter, who is the head of the New America Foundation, came out, and it was called Why Women Still Can't Have It All. And I remember where I was at work, and I said, I have to make time to read this article. I cleared my desk. It was a Friday. I had a one-year-old and a two-year-old trying to get out of town, trying to get that two-year-old potty trained to be in a three-year-old classroom. There was a lot on my mind, and I read this really dense article from Anne-Marie Slaughter, and well-cited. And you get to the end, and I was just crestfallen because there wasn't an answer. I'm wondering, when you were writing this book, was it hard for you to come to some conclusions because there aren't really clear answers?
Yeah. I think if there were clear answers, this wouldn't be a book, right? What I wanted to do was answer the question, why are we still living this way? And I wanted to write the book that would have been useful to me when I started out as a parent. And I think by really unpacking at this and looking at all the research and talking to women and talking to men, you really get a sense of why we're so stuck. And I think having that knowledge, you know, the saying, forewarned is forearmed, I think really giving this a lot of thought can help people avoid falling into these falling into these paths that we all seem to fall into. So there are no easy answers, but I think the knowledge goes a really long way, and I hope that's what I've provided.
What did you learn from couples who did manage to achieve a distribution of chores and childcare that seemed fair? How did they do it?
They were so committed to doing it. There was this couple that said, they're actually quoted in another book that I read about this. They said, we mostly just wanted to be equals. And it really does seem like you have to make that your priority. We've all internalized so much sexism without even being aware of it. It's so baked into the culture that without that kind of commitment to it, people find themselves not being able to pull it off. One woman that I spoke to was a sociologist and was involved with family studies. And as an undergrad, she got really involved in the work-life balance research. And when she met her husband, she said to him, look, this is my priority. We've got to make this priority. She did all this graduate work in it. Her friends thought she was crazy. She told me that she was so invested in this. But she said what she saw was, you know, her friends who thought she was too intense were now really struggling with this dynamic. And she and her husband weren't, because they had, made this their priority.
Let's go to Sarah now, joining us from Shorewood. Hi, Sarah.
Good morning. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm wondering whether you've looked into at all whether there's a difference between blended families that come together later in life versus those that, you know, happen organically. And specifically, I'm in a relationship where I have no kids and my partner has three. And the situation, you know, has allowed us to have a lot of proactive discussions before. I'm about to move in, and so we had really a lot of discussions up front about how we were going to parent and what the parity would look like. And just curious if you've found that there are differences when families are blended.
Yes, that's a great question. And it's an area that I didn't look at much, but the one paper I read about it suggested that stepmothers end up doing quite a bit, while the same does not happen with stepfathers. So in the gendered situation that you're in, you know, you, I guess, per the research, will end up taking more than if you were the man moving in with the woman with her own biological children.
Sarah, thanks for the call. Let's go to Paula now in La Crosse. Hi, Paula.
Hi, good morning. I'm just wondering if when you were in interviewing the women, I had a friend and it was so interesting. This was about 10 years ago. Our kids are now pretty much grown and gone. But she used to always refer to the house, the kids, as my, like my kids, my kitchen, my house, my, not the hour. And I just, I would confront her on that. Like, why, you know, and her husband, unfortunately, was old school and used to think there was still women's work. But any thought that did the women refer to it as the my instead of the hour?
You know, they didn't. But one thing that women did say to me was, you know, this wasn't the division of labor that I would have wanted, but this is what I've got, and now I really own it. I'm really taking this on. It was sort of like almost this kind of angry statement of, well, now I own this. So it was like this anger mixed with pride. Like, you know, when women feel powerless to make change happen in their own households, I think they can fall back to that position. You know, there's also a lot more societal pressure on women to maintain the home and, you know, do a great job with the kids. So that comes into play as well.
Let's go to Jared now in Sparta. Jared, hi.
Hey, good morning. Hey, my comment was basically just that, so my wife and I are in kind of the opposite of a relationship we're talking about today. So I work full-time. My wife stays home full-time. She's also doing school online. And I just, basically my comment is that well before we entered into the situation that we're in now, we set those expectations and talked about that ahead of time. And kind of what a couple callers ago talked about, asked each other, you know, what is this going to look like? Who's going to do the bulk of the child raising and homework and stuff like that? And so really, I think that as society has kind of become more modern and things like that, there's been this push back against women staying home and kind of raising the kids, you know, throughout the day and doing some of those household chores. Whereas my point on it is that I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that it just needs to be set out in advance, because my wife is very happy. I'm very happy, and it can work. It's just if you enter a relationship without knowing that that's going to be how it is, it'll never work.
Right. You know, I'm really glad you're making that point. When couples explicitly agree on arrangements and then I suppose can renegotiate if they're not working, that things go smoothly then. It's the couples where childcare primarily defaults to the women without explicit agreement that trouble kind of gets brewing. And that's a lot more couples than you might imagine. But no, there's nothing wrong with any arrangement, and couples are successful when they, again, make explicit agreements about how things are going to go rather than letting all the work default to the woman without any agreement.
Well, let's turn this on yourself now. How has spending time researching, writing, being engrossed in this topic, division of labor, how has that changed your own household and how your marriage is?
Well, you know, the research, I spent a year immersed in this research, and it made me really angry. I grew up in an era of equal access to education and at least entry-level jobs, and kind of thought we were past a lot of this. And as I got into the reading, I would just get really mad. So there was that. It was also kind of at the front and center in our relationship before I started writing the book. And then we got to a better place with it when I started writing. So we were in a better place, but I was reading all this stuff and it was difficult. I'll actually say, interestingly, you know, my husband only read the book recently, and I've noticed that he's been way more on top of things. So even as I was writing it and we were talking about a lot of it, things have started to shift since he's read this, which really makes me optimistic about the impact of the book might have. I mean, my husband's a wonderful father. The book is not about men not stepping up in terms of fathering. It's really, again, about the co-parenting piece. So, you know, I think a little knowledge for both men and women, certainly not just women, goes a long way in addressing this problem.
Darcy, thank you so much for joining us.
Kate, thank you so much for having me.
Darcy Lockman is a writer and clinical psychologist based in New York, and her new book is All the Rage: Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. Just ahead, potholes are plaguing Wisconsin roads as construction season is underway. We'll look at the causes and fixes for the potholes on our roads. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.